You don't smell bad enough.
My reply was drowned out by a shrill bellow echoing from the darkness beyond the fire's light. It reminded me of a stag's cry, only fiercer and more savage. No one moved. Trogoth? Gint said, flipping over the top card of his deck. He didn't sound certain, but no one disagreed. Something's got it riled up.
It sounds close, I said. My grip tightened convulsively on the hilt of my knife. I'd fought Trogoths before. I wasn't in a hurry to repeat the experience.
It won't come any closer, Orm said.
He sounded more certain than Gint, but not by much.
They rarely do. Most of the ones on this route know better. It's just letting us know that we're in its territory.
Sounds strange, Lucio said. Not like any Trogoth I've ever heard. Gint shrugged. Might be sick. He shuffled his deck of cards, his movements nervous. Never known Trogoths to get sick, though.
Saw one with the rot once,
a sellsword named Accus muttered. He was a stocky man, barrel-chested and bandy-legged. He wore armour made from gyrock hide and a steel pot-helmet that covered most of his head. The shield propped up beside him was circular and battered, and the sword he carried was little more than a cleaver.
It died, he added.
Most things with the rot do, I said. The rot wasn't natural, like many of the plagues that still haunted the byways of the realm. It was a dark gift bestowed upon the mortal races by a mad god. It ate away at flesh and muscle until only maggot-riddled bone remained. Worse than moss leprosy, for at least with the moss you felt no pain. The rot wasn't so considerate.
It's the ones that don't die you have to watch out for,
Orm growled. It's been a long time since we've seen any of their sort, Lucio said. He looked around nervously, as if seeking rot-bringers in every shadow. He wasn't the only one. But their memory lingers like a stink, Gint said. I'd fought rot-bringers before. I remembered the way it had felt as my hammer pulped purpling flesh and maggot-riddled bone. It wasn't like fighting men. The rot had come with them decades ago and had lingered long after the last of them had perished. Sometimes it flared up again in out-of-the-way places. I'd seen the aftermath of that as well, more than once. I'd heard the screams as the afflicted were locked in their own homes and the torches were lit. I'd watched the smoke from the pyres rise and smelled the stink of burning meat. A worse smell, somehow, than any stink I'd encountered on the battlefield, and made all the more awful by the fact that the screams had continued long after they should have stopped. I watched the motes of ash rising up as the campfire crackled and snapped, devouring the scrap wood that was used to feed it. It reminded me of the chapel, of the smell of smoke in my nose, and the sound of weapons, the sound of death, the sound of the storm. I remembered the ugly amethyst light of Pharos's magics, as he spat obscenities and spells in the same breath. Osmal's scream as a knife dug for his vitals. Mern yelling out Sigmar's name as he fought. I remembered doing the same. I remembered climbing the steps of that crumbled dais and Cassian waiting for me there, his golden mask, Sigmar's mask, the face of the God King in his hand.
the look in his eyes as I swung my hammer towards his head. Not wrathful or fearful, sad, as if he understood the enormity of my error, as if he forgave me. Thunder boomed off in the distance. I jumped. Haran? I blinked. Gint held up a card. Care for a game? Orm snorted.
You call that a game?
He laughed. The sound was like rocks crunching together.
That's nothing but bluffing for coin. A real game requires skill.
Gint seemed unperturbed. You're only saying that because I beat you last time. Orm flushed. His eyes glinted with danger.
You cheated.
And you got cheated, Gint said blithely. He shuffled the deck. Not my fault you couldn't catch me.
I want my gold back, Gint.
Then play me again, he smiled. No cheating this time, I promise.
Your promises aren't worth the air you wasted speaking them.
Gint laughed and looked at me. How about you? Let me win some of that money back, hey? He flicked a card into a nearby bucket. He repeated the gesture twice more. He was skilled when it came to cards.
No.
Gint made as if to protest, but Orm beat him to it.
Going to Headwater Breach, then? He asked, looking at me. Way I hear it, he's going to Wald, Akas said. Though Sigmar alone knows why.
He burped and used a knife to pick at something in his teeth.
Bad place, that, a drover said.
He was a heavy-set man, grizzled and weather-beaten. He stank of bramble horn and had a thick beard, plaited in Lyrian fashion, bound in clasps of iron.
Oh? I asked. And what do you know about it?
Yeah, Gunter, what do you know about it? Gint said.
I've been riding herd on this route since you were squalling for your mother's milk, Gunter said.
He thrust his knife into the remains of the chicken carcass dangling from the pit and prized loose a chunk of meat.
Been to Wald a time or two?
He chewed thoughtfully.
Not a good place.
I glanced at Gint.
So I'm told. What makes it not good?
The drover sucked grease from his fingers.
None of the Kentons are, really. Can't be. Got to be hard to live out here, in her lands.
Silence fell for a moment. Men glanced instinctively at the trees. We all knew who the drover meant. She had many names. The Ever Queen, the Lady of Leaves, the Singer Beneath the Boughs. But whatever one called her, she was no friend to men. Especially those from Greywater Fastness. This land, this realm, was hers. Whatever the church said, and her children prowled the wilderness. Several of the drovers murmured prayers, and one of the sellswords, a Verdian, pulled a charred piece of wood from the edge of the fire and knocked on it. Orm made a curious gesture and spat between his spread fingers.
Don't say her name, whatever you do. Not out here.
The Dwarden stirred the fire fiercely, casting up a swathe of sparks.
I didn't say her name, Gunter protested. I know better. How long have I been doing this?
He cut off another slice of chicken. Since I was squalling for my mother's milk, apparently, Gint said.
Quiet, I said. I looked at Gunter. What do you know about Wald? Nasty place,
the drover said. Besides that, used to be bigger, logging camps, farms, then the waters rose and swallowed most of it. All that was left was what was on high ground. Everything else was drowned. The drover cleaned his knife on his trousers and sheathed it. Place has been sliding into the mud ever since. Waters rise and fall here like ocean tides. Some days the swamp retreats, and some days it advances. He looked at me. They don't like strangers there. I smiled. Do they anywhere? Gunter shook his head. I've heard stories about folk going to Wold and never leaving. About a peddler found strung up and hanging from a tree, his body all cut to ribbons like he fell in a thorn bush. Or the tithe man who went missing.
Tithe men always go missing, a sellsword said from across the fire, usually with a saddlebag full of comets. This witticism was met with laughter. Gunter shook his head.
You mark me. Wold doesn't belong to us. There is them that say you can see lights dancing on the waters and hear the eels singing when the water's low. But when it's high, things come walking up out of the deep places, hungry things.
He pushed himself to his feet.
I only hope we're past the place by then.
He sloped off without a parting word, leaving the rest of us to get on with our evening. No one was much in the mood to talk after that. Even Talia's playing died away to a few notes, plucked half-heartedly. Eventually, she got up and left. The other sellswords followed suit, one by one. Gint joined them, murmuring something about sleep. I stayed where I was, watching the fire. I think, eventually, I slept. Or at least it felt like sleep. My limbs were like lead, and my thoughts circled one another slowly. But my eyes weren't closed, and even as the fire burned to a red murmur, I saw something unfold from the edges of the swamp. At first, I took it to be a stag, perhaps drawn by the light, the smell of food, or the other animals. But it moved wrong, and was far too massive. I'd only ever seen beasts that big in Gur. And the way it appeared, absent one moment, there the next. It stepped over and past the unheeding sentries, silent and towering, blotting out the clouds and the stars beyond. Its antlers stretched up and out, spreading as if to fill the sky. With it came the sound of splashing and an eerie trilling, as if something in the waters celebrated its coming. A smell like wet bark and blood rolled over me. The animals stirred, lowing and bleating, huddling together as the towering shapes stepped over them soundlessly. Restive horses pawed the mud, whinnying as their riders murmured calming words. They could not see what the animals saw, what I saw, could not see the antlers scraping the sky, or hear the sound of creaking boughs. I felt the spongy ground shift beneath me as it drew close. I tried to make myself as small as possible. I closed my eyes, hoping it would go past, whatever it was. I felt the ground tremble and knew it was close, knew, without looking, that it was leaning over the wagon,
leaning close, thrusting something that might have been a face down towards me. I heard a rustling, soughing sound. Wake up. I bolted upright, heart thudding. Bleary-eyed, I took in the camp. The fires were burning low, and most were still asleep. I looked around, but saw no great shape, smelled no musk of wet bark or blood. Just a dream, then, and not as bad as some. I ran my hands through my hair and made to lie back down when I saw Gint pad past. He was moving quietly, his gaze fixed on something or someone. Curious, I rose and followed as quietly as I could. If Gint was up to something, I wanted to know what. Chapter 4. Haglight. Gint slipped past the sentries easily. They weren't watching for anyone sneaking out of camp. Only a lunatic would do that out here. Leaving the road was tantamount to suicide. But Gint seemed determined. When I spotted the haglights, I realized why. They danced across the surface of the water or along the branches of the trees. He splashed after them as they retreated. He said something, but I couldn't make it out. I told him not to look, the fool. Obviously he hadn't listened. Gint was nothing to me, but I followed nonetheless. I couldn't tell you why. Maybe it was because I got used to following my instincts in such matters. Working for a man like Caspar Gunno had taught me that much. The moment you ignore your instincts is the moment you end up face down in a canal, your throat open, ear to ear. Then again, if I hadn't followed my instincts, I wouldn't have had to work for Caspar Gunno in the first place. The swamp swallowed us up with barely a whisper. From within the shroud of trees, it seemed endless, stretching in all directions as far as the eye could see. A chill mist rose from the waters, clinging to the bases and branches of the trees and the tottering piles of semi-collapsed stone. The shadows seemed to be waiting for the sun to slip, and then they spilled out from beneath the trees at every opportunity. Gint vanished. I had him in my sights one moment and the next gone. I struggled over to where he had been, blundering through the bulrushes and past mouldy stone markers. I could hear the bending and snapping of branches all around me, as if something heavy were moving very swiftly. I drew my knife, knowing it would do no good, but glad to have it regardless. "Gint," I shouted, "where are you?" "Where are you? Where are you?" It wasn't my voice I heard echoing back at me. To my left, something laughed. It was the laugh of a child, but sinister. Stripped of innocence and joy, a malign sound. The suddenness of it, incongruous in my surroundings, stopped me dead. I listened, detecting only the soft sounds of the swamp, the hum of insects and the rustle of vermin, the murmur of wind through the highest branches. A twig snapped behind me. I turned, looking back the way I'd come. I could just make out the glow of the campfires. It seemed farther away than it ought to be. To my right, there was a hint of movement, as if someone, something, had ducked out of sight, just as I turned. Another laugh, softer than the wind. "Come out," I said, even though I knew, hope, hoped they wouldn't. "You want me? Come and get me."
Bravado had carried me through unpleasant circumstances more than once. A bellyful of spite can keep a man on his feet even when he ought to be dead. Showing you were harder and meaner than anyone else kept you alive on the streets of the fastness. My words were swallowed by the trees. No reply came. Part of me was glad. I knew what this was. They were trying to distract me, to keep me from reaching Gint. They'd chosen him as their prey, not me. Another reason I should go, while I could. But I didn't. "Gint," I called out. "Damn it, Gint."
"Gint, Ind, Ind." More laughter, eerie and sibilant. "Look, you can see him."
I didn't. I saw only the vague hint of a man moving rapidly away through the water and shadow. I could hear him, though, splashing.
"Look, there he is."
A tree rose up in my path, its bark shaggy with moss. It stank of standing water and seemed to totter on broken roots. Geists clung to it, watching me with empty holes for eyes. They tried to speak, but no sound came out. Which was just as well. I wasn't in the mood to listen, anyway.
"Look, over there, there, there."
I turned. Insects swarmed me in a humming cloud. I swiped at them, trying to clear the air. I was in the dark now, the light of the camp blotted out, and voices all around me. Branches tugged at my hood and coat. I chopped at them with my knife, to no avail.
"Go back. Stop. Go back."
I pressed on. Brambles tore at my legs and hands. The haglites clumped thick and radiant to either side of me. I could hear the Sylvaneth murmuring all about me, laughing at me. Of course they thought it was funny.
"Only death awaits you. Ooh, ooh, ooh."
I could see them now. Thin shapes, moving from tree to tree, illuminated by the dancing haglights. I pushed through the reeds and hanging branches, trying to follow them, but they darted away before I got too close. I found myself staring at the camp. They'd led me in a circle, without me noticing.
"Go back. Go back."
I heard a cry and turned.
"Gint?"
I asked, more softly than I intended. There was a snort and a stamp, as of a great hoof. Things that might have been antlers set the branches to rattling. I remembered my dream and wanted to run. The thing turned and bolted, crashing through the brush. Without knowing why, I followed. Maybe it wanted me to. Maybe I just wanted to prove I wasn't afraid. Regardless, it led me away from the light, away from the camp, deeper into the dark. Voices, sounds spun around me in a dismal cacophony. Were the Sylvaneth following me, or were they trying to get out of the way of whatever I was pursuing? I didn't have long to think about it. The beast, the stag, leapt over a fallen tree and galloped through a cloud of haglites, scattering them to reveal my quarry. Gint hadn't got as far as I'd feared. They'd been waiting on him, or maybe just for anyone foolish enough to leave the safety of the camp. The Sylvaneth surrounded him. I couldn't tell how many. Things of mist and bark, circling, jeering, clutching. They had faces like demented infants and screaming women. Their curved claws pulled him back and forth as if he were a toy they were fighting over. His arms and face bled from dozens of small cuts already. Soon they'd butcher him. Once they'd finished arguing over the privilege. He was dazed and crying out with every slash and poke. He was trying to say something, to talk to them, maybe. Gint was the type to think he could talk his way out of anything. Not this time. They knocked him to his knees. I knew then that they decided to end the game. They froze as my guide galloped past, sending waves of water up and scattering the haglights. It gave a shrill cry as it vanished into the trees. Old instincts are hard to ignore. While they were distracted, I charged one of the Sylvaneth and knocked it sprawling into the water. The rest turned on me, hissing and shrieking. I slashed out with my knife, driving them back as I made my way to Gint's side. They swiped at me, but none came close, as if uncertain. It wouldn't last.
"Gint, wake up," I snarled, grabbing his arm. "Get up, fool."
He looked at me in a daze.
"What? Haran?"
The Sylvaneth snarled and wailed, circling us. I could see more of them, creeping about through the trees, cutting off all routes of escape.
"Get up, damn you,"
I said, trying to get him on his feet.
"Get up or I'm leaving you here."
As I spoke, a Sylvaneth sprang towards us. I lunged, catching it in mid-leap. The knife jolted in my hands, and I twisted it, piercing bark and releasing a spurt of sap. The Sylvaneth screamed and jerked away from me, staggering back.
"The meat bites,"
it shrilled in a voice like rushes rustling in the wind.
"It bites with iron. Tear it with bark and stone,"
another screeched.
"Pulp it and grind it, break its bones and make it dance."
The others hissed in similar fashion, but none seemed willing to make the first move. It was as if something held them back. I've never been one to look a gift horse in the mouth.
"Come on," I said.
I caught hold of Gint and hauled him stumbling after me. I could make out the ruddy glow of the campfires reflected on the water. We hadn't gone as far as I'd thought.
"Where are we going?"
he gasped. Behind us, I heard screeches and the snap of limbs as the Sylvaneth gave chase. I didn't look back, though Gint did. From his curses, I could tell it wasn't a pleasant sight.
"They're right behind us," he said.
"Head to the light," I said. "Don't stop, whatever you do."
I should have known better. Such words were tantamount to a challenge. Gint stumbled and fell, spluttering. I heard a rushing sound, like water surging over its banks. As I hauled him roughly to his feet, something tore at the edges of my coat. A shrill caterwaul of scraping branches and popping roots filled my ears. The cacophony threatened to deafen me. Water surged up, and other things besides, reaching, grasping, coiling things. I heard Gint scream. Brambles erupted from the black water and lashed about me as I turned, knife in hand. They bit into my flesh and tore my clothes. I strained against them, gripping a nearby root, desperate not to be dragged under those waters. I knew that if I went, I wouldn't surface again. I felt my fingernails lift and tear, as splinters slid beneath them. The brambles tightened about me, biting into my legs and stomach. "Haran!" Gint began, grabbing for me. I shoved him back with my free hand.
"Go, you idiot!" I shouted. "Keep moving!"
Then I lost my grip and was dragged, thrashing towards the dark beneath the trees. I twisted, stabbing at the woody vines that held me. My knife was sharp, and I was desperate. Serum spurted, and the vines contracted, as if in pain. I stabbed again and again, bracing myself against the trees. Water rushed up and swirled about me, cold and clutching. There were bones in it, brown from their time in the mire. I was shouting now, old snatches of half-remembered prayers and catechisms. Just words, a mindless animal bellow of protest. I glimpsed shapes that hunched and skulked, ghostly faces that were not faces, not really, leered in, and jagged splinter teeth champed in excitement, or maybe frustration. I slashed frantically, fiercely at the brambles. They released me, gouging me bloody as they pulled loose and slithered back into the water. I was bleeding from dozens of small wounds, and my hands were raw and red. I struggled hurriedly to my feet and staggered after Gint. He was already halfway to the light when I caught up to him. Both of us were bloody and flagging. But stopping now meant a nasty death, or something worse. As I ran, I shouted, "Where the camp? Where?" Gint joined his voice to mine as we burst from the tree line, staggering through knee-deep waters towards the glow of welcoming light. I have never been so glad to see any place as I was that camp in that moment. At first, I feared no one had heard us. Then an alarm bell began to ring. I saw torches spring to life as men and women poured out from between the wagons. I heard voices shout in fear and shock as we stumbled into the light. However, the Sylvaneth were nothing if not persistent. They came in a rush, hot on our heels. Gint was knocked sprawling, and I nearly lost my head. I lashed out with my knife, hacking at whatever came in reach. I recognized the one that I had wounded before, even as it bore me backwards against the embankment. I stabbed it again and again as it tried to throttle me. Sap spattered my clothes and hands as its splintery fangs snapped at my face. Crossbow bolts punched into it, knocking it back. It staggered and screamed.
"Fire, you idiots!" Chanty bellowed. "Fire and axes! I've got plenty of both!"
Orm roared as he splashed down towards the Sylvaneth, axe slashing out in a wide arc to drive the Treekin back. Behind him came Talia, Akkas, and several other sellswords. All bore torches in their hands, and the Sylvaneth retreated. But they didn't go far, merely to the edge of the light. They prowled there, hissing and creaking like trees caught in a windstorm.
"Everyone get out of here!" Orm shouted. "Back onto the road, all of you!"
He paced at the edge of the light, axe at the ready.
"They won't follow us onto the road."
"How do you know?"
I demanded as I shoved Gint up the embankment.
"Trust me, manling,"
Orm growled. He swung his axe at a Sylvaneth who got too close. The Treekin retreated, snarling.
"I've done this before. All of you, fall back."
The sellswords didn't need to be told twice. Akkas and Orm fell back more slowly, never taking their eyes off the Sylvaneth. A dozen treekin pursued them, without haste. I could hear more of them, moving in the dark. From above came Chanti's voice, calling for more light, and the squealing of frightened animals. Then, from out of the swamp, came a shrill bellow, like the cry of a stag. For a moment, everything stopped. The Sylvaneth seemed to turn as one, heads cocked.
"The old stag,"
one of the creatures chittered.
"He calls." "The old stag. The old stag."
"No," another hissed, the one I'd hurt. "This is our meat, our prey."
The Sylvaneth lunged forward, quicker than thought, and knocked both Akkas and Orm sprawling. Akkas's sword spun from his grip. It raised both fists over the stunned mercenary.
"Akkas!" Talia called out.
I snatched up Akkas's fallen sword just as the Sylvaneth slammed both fists down on his shield. The metal buckled, and I heard the mercenary's arm shatter. Akkas fell back into the water, cursing. I took two swift steps towards him. The Sylvaneth reared back, as if startled, leaving itself open. I struck. The sword was not well made. It was not a kingly blade, or even a soldier's weapon. It was a tool, nothing more. But it did the job. The Sylvaneth's head rolled free of its neck and fell into the water with a deep splash. The body followed a moment later. Both vanished beneath the water. Silence fell. The treekin stared at me, and I felt something take root in my soul. A niggling fear that I'd crossed some line I hadn't noticed before. Then, one by one, they slipped back into the trees and were gone, as if they had never been. Panting slightly, I turned to check on Akkas.
"Took its head off with one blow,"
he said, as if not believing his own eyes.
"Seemed the thing to do," I said. "Are you
still alive?"
the girdish sellsword said, in a voice tight with pain. Taelya helped him to solid ground, Orm following them.
"Thanks to you," Taelya added.
I shook my head.
"Orm would have done it, if I hadn't."
"But he didn't,"
Akkas said. Orm shrugged.
"Not being paid to keep you alive, am I?"
"I'm not sure why I'm paying any of you,"
Chanti spat. He was waiting for us at the top, a torch in his hand. He glared at me.
"What were you playing at, Blackwood? Even a fool like you should know better than to leave the road, especially at night."
"It was my fault," Gint said, before I could reply. "I thought..." He trailed off. Chanti stared at him, as if he'd sprouted a second head.
"You thought what? Maybe they'd want a game? Maybe you wanted to break the truce and get us all killed, eh?"
"We weren't the first to break it. Look at these tracks,"
Orm said. He crouched near one of the wagons.
"Something was wandering out here."
He traced a deep print, cut into the muddy ground.
"Like a stag's hoof, only too large, and wrong somehow."
He gestured with his axe.
"And there, on the wagons, see those marks?"
There were scrapes on the wood, as if something sharp had been rubbed against the side of the wagon. The marks were almost a pattern, if you squinted. As if whatever it was had marked the wagon. I glanced back at the swamp, but there was nothing there save darkness.
"I want the guard doubled for the rest of the night," Chanty said. "And someone set Akas's bloody arm."
He looked at me.
"That goes for you too, Blackwood. You're on watch."
"I doubt I could sleep anyway," I said. Chanty nodded. He paused.
"You should have left him."
I thought about it. He snorted.
"Should have thought harder. Sometimes there's a toll that needs paying, like it or not."
He clapped a hand on my shoulder.
"I think you know that better than most."
I nodded and looked around. Gint had vanished. He hadn't even thanked me. Not that I'd expected it. I realized I was still holding Akas's sword. I looked down at it, at the sap staining it like blood. I made a half-hearted attempt to clean it, but it was impossible.
"You'll need to hold it in the fire," Orm said. "Have to bake it off."
"Akas can do it himself, then." I planted the sword in the ground before me.
"Thank you," I said, after a moment.
Orm grunted.
"I'm paid to defend the caravan, manling. That includes you."
He peered at me. He indicated the marked wagon.
"That was the wagon you rode on, wasn't it?"
"What of it?" Orm shrugged.
"Perhaps nothing, but none of the other wagons were marked in such a fashion. Scratches, mud, but nothing like that."
He looked away.
"The spirits in this place are young, by the reckoning of this realm. Like children, they're spiteful, but not wise. Cruel, but lacking in cunning."
"You sound like you've had first-hand experience." Orm chuckled, but there was no mirth in it.
"We of the Bale Drag have long had dealings with them."
"Friendly dealings?"
"No, they have no friends, those folk. Like the forest, they are hard and wild, treacherous, and as changeable as the seasons. Just like their queen."
Orm looked around.
"But best, perhaps, to keep such thoughts to ourselves. They hold grudges as well as any of my kin."
He looked at me knowingly.
"Something, perhaps, to keep in mind."
Chapter 5. Water Road.
We reached the Canton of Wald a few days later. I'd spent my time wisely. Every drover and sellsword in the caravan had stories, and I'd gathered them the way Gint gathered coins. Most of them were the same refrain, over and over again. Wald was sour. Wald wasn't for strangers. But here and there were other stories, bits and pieces of tales told by peddlers and realm walkers. Stories of laughter in the night, and creaking shapes lolloping along isolated tracks, of strange processionals through the swamps, and rough voices raised in song. Nothing that made me want to stay any longer than I had to, or gave me any insight into why Mern was here, and why he'd risked so much to contact me. I wondered if he knew what calling on me meant, whether he suspected I'd come to shut him up, if for no other reason. Maybe he was counting on it. That would have been like him. Mern had always been one for risks, especially in the right cause. When I wasn't catching stories, I dozed. It was hard to sleep at night, with the silent trees looking on. The animals agreed, and I shared their unease, even if no one else did. and when I dozed, I dreamed strange green dreams, not my usual dreams of fire and the stink of incense, but dreams of wet shadows and soft green pulsing things. I didn't like it. Something was waiting for me in Wald. I could feel it, like a beast circling just beyond the fire, waiting for me to let my guard down. I was determined to make sure that it would be sorely disappointed. Outside the wagon, a bramblehorn groaned in protest as a drover swatted it back onto the path. The swamp edged closer to the road, and the horsemen were careful to keep their bramblehorns from straying. There was precious little safe ground away from the road out here, and nowhere close to hand to forage. I heard Gint laugh and looked over at the card players. As usual, Gint was winning. I didn't know whether or not he was cheating this time, but it wouldn't have surprised me. It never stopped the other drovers and the sellswords from trying to take his money regardless. Akkas and Taillieu were among them. The girdish warrior had his arm in a sling and was awkwardly trying to sharpen his blade one-handed. I'd dulled it when I'd taken the Sylvaneth's head off. Taillieu was playing cards and losing badly, by the looks of it. "That's it, Taillieu," Gint said, throwing down his hand. "A full bastion. Beat that." Taillieu threw down her cards in disgust. The sellsword had her lute strapped to her back, and as she reached for it, she said, "Just for that, I'm going to write a song about you, Gint, and not a flattering one."
"Given how you play, that's not much of a threat," Gint chortled.
The sellsword rose to her feet, looking as if she might just brain him instead. But she turned away and plucked sourly at the strings of the lute. She kicked my outstretched feet aside. "What did I do?" I asked, looking up. "Nothing," she said, and strummed the lute. "More's the pity." She sat down beside me and let her legs dangle off the back of the wagon. "Still planning to leave us at the next stop?"
"Yes," she nodded.
"Be better if you didn't. You're good with a sword. Chanty would hire you, if you'd ask him to."
"I have something I have to do."
She indicated my knife. "That sort of something?"
I looked away.
"Does it matter?"
"Not to me."
She strummed her lute for a moment.
"You saved Akkas, so I owe you."
"You too close, then?"
"Close enough." She plucked a sour chord. "Care for a bit of advice?"
"If it's free."
"I did some work up around the barony of Mossreach a few years back."
I indicated her sword.
"That sort of work?"
She grinned.
"The only kind that pays. Anyway, the old baron hosts a feast every winter solstice. Lord Wald was among the guests.
Right bastard. Arrogant.
So, like nobles everywhere?"
"He's different. Most of the petty lordlings in these parts like to claim they've got Azurite ancestry, like to pretend they're descended from Sigmar himself, rather than just jumped-up backwater aristocracy. But the Walds claim a different sort of lineage." She leaned over and spat. "Jade-bloods, all Gyronites. Not from Vadia or Lyria, though. Somewhere farther south."
That was unusual. Most of the cantons around Greywater Reach were ruled by Starbloods, descendants of the first Azurite colonists to arrive in Gyron.
"They've been here a while, then," I said. Taillieu nodded.
"You might say that."
She scratched her chin.
"They've been here since there was a here, the way it was told to me. Their roots go deep."
"I'm not planning to get in their way, if that's what you're worried about."
"You might not have a choice."
"Oh?
You're looking for someone, aren't you?"
I paused.
"Maybe. Why?"
"P
people go missing in Wald. So I hear. She looked at me. A while back, I heard from some acquaintances of mine in Akersus. The Lord Wald was looking for sellswords, needed guards, or so they said. That's not unusual. The swamps are dangerous, even at the best of times. They didn't need them for defense. She plucked at her lute. They needed them for transport duty. That caught my attention. Enforced transport was a common sentence for criminal behavior in Greywater Fastness. You got stuffed onto a prison barge with every other lowlife and debtor that the Greycaps had caught that day and sent somewhere downriver. Generally, a term of forced labor was what awaited you at the end of your involuntary pilgrimage. Occasionally, it would mean service in one of the penal regiments, or being press-ganged onto a ship heading for Thyrea. Sometimes, it just meant a stint of hard labor. I didn't realize the swamp cantons transported their criminals. They don't, she said, playing softly. The transports were coming to Wald. Why? She shrugged. I didn't ask, and they didn't say. I sat back. Well, it's none of my business either, is it? Thank you, though. For what? The warning. She nodded. What you did for Akkus, I owed you. She strummed her lute. And Gint is a fool. But you did right by him. A bell began to ring, somewhere further up the line. Looks like we've arrived, Talia said. She slid from her perch and landed lightly on the ground. Watch yourself, Blackwood, she said as she strode off. Keep that knife of yours close. I leaned out of the back of the wagon, ignoring the rain that plastered my hair to my scalp. I watched the wagons behind us sway to a halt along the muddy stretch of road. As always, the guy rocks protested loudly, their heavy hooves sinking deep into the marshy ground as they lumbered to a stop. Clouds of insects rose about the straining animals and spread out into shimmering waves as the wagons rocked on their axles. The trees were thicker here, rising from the water in clumps. They reminded me of watchtowers overseeing the approach to a castle. Rushes blanketed the shallows, and the grass on the causeway was akin to an animal's pelt. Everything was green and damp and reeked of the swamp. It reminded me of my dreams. For a brief moment, I considered doing as Talia had suggested. A man like me could make his fortune in Headwater Breach. Caspar Gunnar wasn't the only usurer in the Jade Kingdoms. And men like that always needed someone like me. Maybe afterwards, when I'd done what I'd come out here to do. Maybe then I'd go somewhere else, somewhere smaller than the city, quieter. I took the coin out of my pocket and turned it between my fingers. If Mern was really alive, if he'd really sent the coin, there was only one way this could end. I'd put too much effort into hiding myself to let him ruin it now. What would it be like to kill someone I'd thought of as a friend? Would it be hard? Or worse, easy? I wondered if Mern had asked himself the same thing the last time we'd met. Regardless, I wasn't going to make the same mistake he had. If Evrek Mern was still alive, he wasn't going to be for much longer. So, we're here then, Gint said from behind me. I snapped my fist shut about the coin and shoved it back into my pocket. Looks like. He sat down beside me. I never said thank you, did I? No. He nodded. I'll get around to it. He peered at me. Some luck, you finding me as quickly as you did. I thought they were going to kill me. They were, I said.
I didn't see any reason to mention the stag, or the fact I'd almost abandoned him. "Why did you go out there?" Gint frowned and waved an insect out of his face.
"I saw something."
"What?"
"I don't know. Maybe it wasn't anything at all, or maybe it was just a trick."
He laughed. "No sense in worrying about it now.
Looks like that old Zerk fortune-teller was wrong."
"Was she? Said I'd die in the swamp, and yet here I am. Plenty of time yet." I climbed down out of the wagon. "I'd advise you to stay close to the fire from now on, Gint. At least until you reach Headwater Breach." He called out after me, but I ignored him. I went and found Chanty overseeing the unloading of several crates of powder and shot. "This is the place," I said. He didn't look at me.
"It is.
You said you'd show me the way to Wald from here."
"I did."
"Well?" I looked around impatiently. All I saw was trees and water.
"There it is," Chanty said.
He gestured, but I didn't see anything.
"There what is?"
"The staith there. See it? Just under those trees." I squinted, trying to see through the rain.
"I see some stones."
"That's it." Chanty sounded pleased with himself, like he'd pulled a fast one on me.
"The only road to Wald is through the swamp. Wagons can't get there. Not without getting bogged down. A horse could do it, maybe, but the locals use skiffs."
"Wonderful." I looked at him.
"They'll send a boat?"
"A skiff, yes. Eventually. We pile the merchandise, they come and collect it. Payment is left in the trees."
He knocked on the nearest one, and something clattered. I looked up and saw an oilskin bag dangling from a branch.
"Efficient, and neither of you has ever cheated the other?"
Chanty looked offended.
"All a man has is his reputation."
"And I know yours." Chanty grimaced and turned away.
"Not wise, cheating your customers, especially Lord Wald."
He sounded nervous as the name passed his lips. "No, I suppose not." I adjusted my bedroll. Everything I needed other than my knife fitted into a woolen blanket, folded over and slung across my chest, Freeguild fashion. Another trick learned in the regiment. A change of socks, a few slim books, some trail jerky, and what little coin I had to hand.
"I wish I could say it's been pleasant."
Chanty snorted.
"Better than some trips."
He paused.
"I won't say no if you change your mind. You're good with a sword, and I need extra hands."
"I have business in Wald," I said, as I studied the trees. They were too close together for my liking. The branches rustled in the rain, and it sounded like laughter. Chanty seemed to hear it as well, and he swallowed nervously.
"Do as you will, Blackwood. We'll be coming back this way in a week, if you're still alive."
I nodded. "I might need a ride." Chanty nodded and clapped me on the shoulder.
"Sigmar keep you, Blackwood."
"Why would he start now?" I murmured, as the caravan master turned away. I watched them unload casks of black powder and crates of crossbow bolts. I thought about what Talia had said, and wondered what Lord Wald needed so much ammunition for. It was dangerous out here, true enough, but from what I could see, it was enough to outfit an army.
"Lot of casks. I wonder who they're planning to shoot, eh?"
I turned to see Gint striding towards me, a pack slung across one shoulder.
"What do you think you're doing?"
"I'm going with you," he said cheerfully.
"No, you're not."
"Looks like I am."
He sat down on his pack and started shuffling his cards.
I was getting tired of pretending I knew what droving was anyway. Besides, I'm thinking of settling down, maybe get married.
To anyone in particular, or just whoever?
Oh, you know these Verdian backwaters. Plenty of women, not enough men to go around.
He paused.
Or is that the Thyrian ones?
He shrugged.
Either way, bound to be more interesting than riding in the back of that wagon, taking money off shepherds.
I stared at him. Then I sighed and turned away.
Fine. No argument.
Would it do any good?
Not a bit.
Then why would I waste my breath?
Gint laughed.
We watched the drovers finish unloading the cargo. 10 cases of bolts, 10 casks of powder. Chanti only retrieved the money when they'd finished. It took the caravan some time to get moving again, but when it did, I felt a sense of unease. As the clattering of wheels and the bellowing of the guy rocks faded, silence rushed to fill in the void. The mist rose up strong and quick with it, choking us off from sight of the road. Gint whistled nervously, a habit of his I could see I was going to dislike immensely. For a time there was no noise save the slap of water against stone and the fading clatter of the wagons. The creak of branches, the soft, steady fall of rain across the water and trees. It was almost peaceful. That was probably why I didn't trust it. I'd learned the hard way that peace was an illusion, a veil drawn over something ugly and savage. Life, by its very nature, could not be peaceful. Nothing existed save that it consumed something else. In my experience, nowhere was that more apparent than Gyron.
How long do you think we should wait?
Gint asked.
Until the boat arrives, I said.
I sat down on a sunken stump and watched the water swirl about the stones. There'd been a proper dock here once, I thought, but the swamp had taken it like it took everything. The consumed and the consumer.
Want to play a hand or two?